Welcome to TA1. Everything you want to know about adventure racing and then some, and not always timely. Hey, I've been busy. So, was it the Champ Car race? Two weekends ago. So, I spent a lot of time getting ready for that and going, and then had a ton of video and content to work on for the team when I got home. So, and then we actually even had some company. One of Paulette's friends who's on her way home from the Rebel Rally spent a few days with us. And it was nice. And then we even had a Halloween party. So, yeah, it's been busy. Anyway, here's our episode that I promised like 2 weeks ago with Donna Boots. I really liked it. I hope you will like it. And, yeah, enjoy it. And we've got some World Championship episodes coming up after that. You know what? And in like 3 weeks, it's the Thanksgiving episode. And you all know what that means. So, anyway, let's go before Jimmy gets too noisy. So remember, slow is fast. Fast is good. Be safe. Take a chance or two once in a while. And thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.
I think it's starting to work.
Okay, can you hear me?
Now I can.
Okay, perfect.
Cool. It works again.
the wonders of modern technology.
Yes. And I even remembered to turn my audio on this time. For like the last three episodes, I forgot to turn my audio on to start with. So. How are you?
Doing good. Can't complain.
Yeah.
So, keeping busy. I did the root stock. They had the Stockville this past weekend with Rootstock Racing. So I did that over the weekend. So that was a lot of fun.
That's kind of cool. So, well, we better start. Tell everybody who you are.
Okay. I'm Donna Boots. I don't know what else you want to know.
Racer.
Yeah, I'm a racer, a venture racer. I just started adventure racing the last couple of years. And before that, I started out as a triathlete. I do a lot of long distance running. I love trail running, mountain biking, just anything. Anything that catches my fancy. I do a lot of obstacle course racing. I've done a lot of different Spartan events as my favorite venue for obstacle course racing. And but I've, you know, dabbled in pretty much most of the different races that are out there. So yeah, just whatever comes along that catches my fancy, I like to do, keep busy.
Yeah, that's a good philosophy. But so how many races have you done this year? Because I'm thinking it's a lot.
Oh yeah, probably. I would say probably maybe 15 or so, something like that.
Yeah, in a couple of months. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I try to keep my relatively good endurance base fitness wise, so that you know when something comes up, I don't have to say, oh, I'm not ready. I haven't trained enough for this. So I can pretty much jump into anything that I want to do. So it works well.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you kind of use then races as a training and then just try to like maintain a base between races?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. A lot of races that I do, you know, I used to, like when I was a triathlete, I would train and I'd have A races and B races and things like that. But now I don't have anything that's really like an A race or anything like that. I just like to just keep fit and just, you know, something comes up and I'll say, oh, you know, I'm just going to go have fun. And then of course, once the gun goes off and you start, you get competitive, but usually look at it just by going to have some fun and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. What piques your interest and causes you to say, yeah, that's a race I want to do? Because you have a big pool of races to pull from.
Yeah, I do. I usually, you know, for me, about 3 years ago, I had a really bad case of Achilles tendonitis, and I thought like my playing days were going to be over. And, you know, when the doctor told me I couldn't even climb at the climbing gym anymore, I was like, ooh, I got to get serious and get this fixed. And so what that did was that caused me to slow down. I took my time and went through the healing process. And then ever since then, I kind of like found that if I slowed down and didn't try so hard when I did races that I could go longer and further. And I really love the endurance aspect of things. It's, you know, so I like to see how far, how long I can push my body and keep it going. So I don't try to kill races now and go out really fast. I just try to pace myself and go out. So that leaves it open for me to do a lot more different things. So usually now what piques my interest more is things that where I can push myself a little further, maybe a little farther than I went before, a little longer. So it's starting to get to the point, how far can I go before my body says that's your limit, you know? So
yeah. So I mean, what do you think? So you're starting to slow down a little bit, but you're obviously not slowing down yet. So kind of a two-part question. What do you think is like a upper limit for doing things? And do you think you can still get to that limit? You know, you're probably not going to get faster, but do you think your endurance is still improving?
My endurance is definitely improving. I don't have really good feet, so I can't do like I did in March of this year. I did the Georgia Death Race, which is like 74 mileish, they say, 74 mileish trail race. And that was, my feet wanted to kill me after about mile 40. So it was like 30 miles was just sheer torture getting through. So I know that my feet, I can't be on my feet constantly for a long, you know, that 74 miles would be it for the distance at one time that I could spend on my feet, which is, so, you know, like 100 miles or something like that are not going to be in my, you know, in my future. But what that's what's nice about adventure racing, because you mix up the disciplines where you're on your feet. You may get that many miles in a race if you're, you know, going to do something that's longer than a 3-day race. But because you're breaking it up with paddling and biking in between, it saves the feet. Like my, you know, I have endurance where I can go for multiple days. I just can't go all that time on just my feet. So,
yeah. So, I mean, you're up to that 4-day range with, you know, like sea to sea, but what do you, I mean, are you looking forward to like a 6, 7, 8-day race eventually?
Yeah, I really want to do, Rootstock Racing has Endless Mountain next June. And that's like, it's like, starts like the day after my birthday. And I'm like, good birthday present, you know? So I'm really, yeah, really, I think I want to sign up for it and I really want to do that. So yeah, I'm ready to start, you know, pushing it to the further than, you know, the 3-day C to C, which is like when I just did the, you know, the Kilimanjaro climb, that was, you know, that was we did a 6-day climb, you know, the whole trip was 7 days from the, when we started at the bottom of the mountain till we got to the summit and then came back down with 7 days. But because you're acclimatizing to the altitude, everything you did slowly, slowly, slowly. So like the total distance covered was maybe total like 40 miles, but it was, you know, over a 7-day period. So I mean, that was a, you know, multi-day thing, but you weren't physically, you know, the altitude challenged you physically, but as far as, you know, just going a lot with, you know, very little sleep and stuff, that wasn't really a factor during that event. So,
yeah. But, well, let's talk about that, because that's kind of was the impetus for.
Yes.
for this chat. So we'll get to a lot of things.
Okay.
What the hell was that?
Okay. Well, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro has been on my bucket list for about 15 years. So, and it was always one of these things that, you know, my husband was like, you know, I couldn't do it. He wouldn't let me go alone to do it. So I'm an avid obstacle course racer. And 2 years ago, I saw one of my obstacle course racing groups, they posted this, you know, it was a post that, you know, they were going to have the world's highest OCR where you could, you know, set a world record, you know, and they were going to put it on in the crater of Mount Kilimanjaro. And this was like in maybe September of 2019 when this came out. And I was like, oh my gosh, what a way to, you know, that's the ends to the means. I can climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and this is a way to get me there. And I wouldn't be doing it alone. I'd be doing it with a group of people that are, you know, like-minded individuals and things like that. So it was like, okay, you know. And then it was like, looking into it, I was like, you know, is this going to be a legit company? Because it was fairly pricey as far as you can climb Mount Kilimanjaro for a lot less than you can go, you know, for what I paid to do the obstacle course and everything. But then again, you're not going to set two world records when you do that. Yeah. So the people that put it on, they were like, they put on like a webinar introduction and introduced him. And one of the gentlemen had, you know, summited Kilimanjaro like over 50 times. And the other gentleman was big into OCR in the UK, and they're both from the UK. And it was like, I was so impressed by him. I'm like, this is going to be good. I'm going to sign up for this. And it was supposed to take place last September, but it was a COVID casualty, you know, from 2020. And I was really amazed that they were able to pull it off and actually have the event take place this year. So it was like 2 years in the planning. And that was like, you know, so I got my dream, and I really wanted to be able to climb Kilimanjaro and then, you know, to do an obstacle course in the crater at the summit, which no one has ever done before. That was really, really unique and cool too. So that's what, you know, was the impetus that got me started and, you know, down that path. But so
well, how did it work? You climbed the mountain and then did the race, or?
Yeah. And what they did, and they everything was really well planned. I mean, we had like, it took, there were 43 of us actually that were, you know, signed up to summit and to do the obstacle course in the crater. And we had like, they had a group of 300 porters that had to carry, like, we carried our own day packs with what we would need during the day. But we had a porter, we were allowed a 30-pound pack with our tent, or not a tent, but our sleeping bag, sleeping pad, all the clothing and extra gear that we needed. And the porters would carry that for us, along with carrying all the tents and all the cooking supplies and all the food and everything like that. So they had about 150 porters for the 45 or so of us that were doing it. And then there was another 150 porters that had to carry all the obstacles up to the summit. In down into the crater and set it all up. So it was a huge undertaking to have all those people do it. And what they did was they took us up the Machame route, which is, it was like a six day acclimatization climb, where we would climb so far each day, and then, you know, you'd sleep that night, and then you'd, you know, acclimatize, and you'd go in. And the big thing, like you always say, slow is fast. And that's the way, big thing when you're climbing Kilimanjaro is poli poli, which is Swahili for slowly, slowly. So that was the big thing. And you just went slowly, slowly. And that's what I did. And I was fortunate because I hadn't been to that high of altitude before, but I'd been to some altitude, and my body seems to adjust fairly quickly to it. So I didn't have to take any altitude medication or anything like that. And I did everything that they told us: make sure you drink plenty of fluids, make sure you eat, you know, properly and get plenty of rest, and then just move slowly, slowly, slowly. So it was really cool, because when I first started climbing, like the first day was really tough. We started down low and it was warm and I was tired, and it was like, oh man, am I going to be able to do this? But then each day I felt I got stronger and stronger and stronger. So then, you know, the day of the summit, we actually took five days of acclimatizing, and then the sixth day was our summit day. And we got up at midnight the day that we were going to summit, and we had to be to the summit by 8 o'clock in order to descend into the crater to do the obstacle course race. So they broke us up into two groups, and I was in the second group, and we're climbing, climbing, climbing. And it takes forever, because the last day you climb about 3,000 feet, you know, higher up, and you're hitting, you know, so the summit is over 18,000 feet. And we just were going so slow, and the sun started to rise behind us, and a couple of people were like, we're not going to make it in time, you know, and we're like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm like, I knew I could summit, but I wanted still the opportunity to descend into the crater to do the obstacle course race. And I'm like, we got to get there by 8 o'clock. So there were a bunch of us like in the front of the second group, and we just started moving faster without rest breaks. And we made it, we were able to get, and we got up to the top. And when you first summit onto Kilimanjaro, you get to a point called Stella Point. And then from there, you can actually see Uhuru Peak in the distance. You know, it's still a ways off, but it's there. And once you get to that point, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm almost there, you know? And it was like, I felt like I could just about run to it, you know, but you couldn't, you could only, you know, walk at a steady pace. So I was able, we got there probably around 7 o'clock, we got to the summit. So we had plenty of time to go down into the crater and then to do the obstacle course, which that in itself was pretty cool. It was a 100-meter course that they set up with 10 obstacles. And in order to be an official finisher, you had to complete 5 of the 10 obstacles. And, you know, never being at altitude and no one had ever done that before, we're like, are we even going to be able to do these 5 obstacles that we knew that we needed to complete, you know, to be an official finisher? And it was, you know, they were fairly, like, if you were at sea level doing them, they were like, okay, balance beam, a cargo net crawl, a sandbag carry, a low wall that you had to go over. And, you know, so it was like simple things, and it would be so easy at sea level, but when you're up at 18,000 feet, you don't know what you're going to be able to do. So I was really amazed at how much energy I had to do the obstacles. And I actually completed 9 of the 10. And the 10th one was like a warped wall that was like 14 feet high. And I have troubles doing that at sea level. So I'm like, the risk of injury for me was too great. And I'm like, I didn't even attempt that obstacle. So I completed 9 out of the 10 obstacles. And they also had another part of the race was they had what was called the altitude OCR championships, where not only did you summit Kilimanjaro, descend into the crater to do the obstacle course, but then you did a speed run, a 2-day speed descent down Kilimanjaro. So I was able to sign up for that. You meet certain criteria to be able to do that. And I had enough endurance in my background and enough running experience that they allowed me to do it. And it was like, it took us 6 days to climb up Kilimanjaro, do the obstacle course, and descend to the high camp, which is Barafu. And it took us, like, we ran from Barafu camp down to Millennium camp, which was like, it was only like a 2.4-mile run, but you had like 800 feet of elevation that you descended, you know, 800 meters. So it was like 2,800 feet of elevation descent. And then you overnighted there. And then the next morning you got up and you ran from there down to Mweka Gate, which was another like 9-mile run with like 4,000 feet of elevation, you know, drop. And it took us days to get to start the run. And it took me like 2 hours to run down. It was like 30 minutes the first day of the run and an hour and 25 minutes the second day. So it's like, it's boggled your mind because it was like, it took you so long to get up there. And then I was down off the mountain 2 hours. It was crazy. Wow. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. All right. So there's a lot to unpack there, but what's it like running down a mountain at altitude?
Actually,
how fast are you going?
I love running downhill. I mean, okay. I think my mile times were maybe around 11 or 12 minute time going downhill, but it's like, because it's pretty steep and rocky, and there's places where you couldn't run. Like you had to, you know, kind of scooch down or, you know, climb down little areas and jump off of rocks and things like that. But what's amazing about it is like when I run downhill, I'm like in a constant, like almost crouch, like almost a gorilla gait, where you're kind of squatting back a little bit and your arms are low and your quads are constantly engaged because you kind of got to keep low so that you can move. And so it's like you're thinking quads don't fail me now. But what was kind of cool was you're starting where you didn't have a lot of oxygen. And as you got down, so even though you're running and you should be getting more tired, your energy level pretty much stays the same because you're getting more oxygen the whole way as you're going down. So it was pretty cool that you could maintain that same intensity the whole way down without, you know, ever really feeling any more tired, you know.
Huh.
It was interesting. I enjoyed it. And I love running downhill. And I know like a lot of people can't do it because it puts a lot of, you know, pressure on your knees and stuff. But I do pretty well on the downhill. I'm slow uphill, fast downhill.
So what's the weather like on Kilimanjaro? How cold was it?
Well, we were blessed with absolutely perfect weather. We did not have any rain. The sun, it was sunny every day. The morning that we got up for the summit, like it could have been anywhere from minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit to positive 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And we had it like at the positive 20. So it was below freezing when we were climbing and everything, but it was, the sun was out. And so it, you know, you're all bundled up and you're moving slow and it wasn't cold at all. It would have been miserable had we had any rain like when we were down in the lower elevations, because when we started, when you start in the low elevation, it's like 70, 80 degrees because you're down low and you're at, you're you know, basically around the equator. And in Africa, even though the elevation at the start is like about 5,000 feet to begin with, it's still pretty warm down there.
Yeah.
So
is what's the what's it look like when you're on top? I mean, everybody knows what Everest looks like and what it looks like around it, but what's Kilimanjaro like?
Well, you know, when you're up, when you get up high and you look down low, a lot of the lower, like what, there's a lot of low-lying clouds. So you're up above the clouds. And when you look down, you can't sometimes see a lot, but because it's a freestanding mountain and there's not mountains all around it, you know, you're basically up on top and you can pretty much see a long ways in every direction. Whereas like, you know, when you're up, you know, you get up on Everest or whatever, you see a lot of other mountaintops and peaks like that. And you don't see that when you're up on Kilimanjaro. You can see like Mount Meru, that's way off in the distance, and, you know, a couple other points, but because it's like just this one huge freestanding mountain, it's a lot, it's different. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
What was the like fitness level of the group? Was it a lot of people that, that should have been there? Yeah. Were there people that should have been there or people that shouldn't have been there?
No, everyone who came should have been there. Everyone that was there, they all trained and they worked really hard. There were a few people that weren't able to make the summit because they just, their bodies couldn't, they couldn't adjust to the altitude, you know, but pretty much everyone that was there deserved to be there. They all worked hard and to get ready to be there. I mean, they had some pretty elite athletes. Like they had four members of the Philippine national OCR team that came. And there was another girl, Christina from Denmark, who's a well-known international runner that, you know, a professional runner. So, and then we had all sorts of, you know, people from OCR backgrounds, some from just that weren't OCR related at all, that just, you know, found out about it and wanted to do it. Yeah, it was a great group of people. We had a lot of fun.
It kind of sounds cool, sort of, you know, in a mountain climbing way.
If you like mountains, the beauty part about Mount Kilimanjaro is you don't need any technical mountains. You don't need any technical skills to climb the mountain. You need to have a good fitness base and, you know, you have to be able to acclimatize to the altitude, but anybody could, you know, anybody with a good fitness base can conceivably summit Kilimanjaro without a lot of difficulties. Just because of the fact that it doesn't require any technical climbing. There was one, the Branco wall on the route that we went up, that was probably the toughest section of climbing, where you actually had to scramble and you had to use your hands and, you know, pull yourself up over some rocky place and everything. But there's no place where you don't need to use any crampons or ice picks or ropes or anything like that to climb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are they going to do this again?
Yes, actually they are. Next year they're going to do it again in the Everest Base Camp is going to be where it's going to be held. So they're going to, you know, you'll climb to the Everest Base Camp, and that's where the obstacle course will be held, but it won't be the highest one because the base camp at Everest isn't as high as Kilimanjaro. So
yeah. So tell me you're smarter than wanting to go to Everest.
You know, I never had a desire to want to go to Everest, but I'm, you know, you always get that post-race itch, you know, where it's like, okay, what can I sign up for next, you know, and it's really starting to grow on me a little bit. So I'm starting to think about it, especially because I took part in the altitude OCR championships, which is it was the very first year for that type of that race with the speed descent down. And those of us that took part in that, because we were in the inaugural year for it, it's an event that you have to qualify for, but because we took part in the inaugural year, we don't have to qualify. It's not, we still have to pay to do the race, but we don't have to qualify. We're like exempt from qualification. So it's like, you kind of got that little, you know, brass ring that you can use, you know, and it's like, maybe I'm going to have to.
We'll see. Yeah. Then you've done it 2 years and then you're like, well, I guess I better go again. And then next thing you know, it's been 10 years and Then you can't stop because you've done it 10 years in a row.
Sea to sea, you know?
I have a friend that's done the 50-mile mountain bike race here every year, which I think is either 20 or 21. And he's like, I don't really want to do it, but I have to because I've done every one of them.
Well, for me, it's got to be something different, though. So because they're going to different places, it's different. Like if they were doing it again at Kilimanjaro, I'd be like, nah, I've done that. I've been there. You know, take me someplace I haven't been before. So,
So do you do that all the time, or do you have races where you go do it and then like, well, I want to do it again to see if I can do it better?
Every now and again, there'll be a race. Like I did the Sea to Summit Triathlon, which is you start out, you swim in a tidal river in Maine, and then you bike 90 something miles to the base of Mount Washington, and then you climb to the top of Mount Washington. And the first year that I signed up for it, they canceled the swim portion because of bacteria in the water. And so I was like, you know, I completed it, but it was just the bike and the climb. And I'm like, well, I really didn't do the whole thing. So I had to sign up and do it again the next year. So I have done that before like that, but usually like big races, I've been pretty lucky mostly where it's like, when I in a big race, I seem to peak and it's like I do it well enough that I don't feel like I need to do it again because I think I could have done it better, that type of thing. Okay. So I've been pretty fortunate there. So it allows me to do other things instead.
Yeah. So what was your background that you became a triathlete?
Well, I was always pretty, you know, I did a lot of sports in high school. And then when I graduated from high school, I didn't do any sports after that. But my job, my husband and I, we own a seed company. So it was always very physical, lifting 50-pound bags of seed and fertilizer and loading in trucks and unloading trucks and all kinds of stuff. So I stayed pretty physically fit then. And then my husband used to be a wild sheep hunter. I don't know if you can see the animals behind me at all, but I used to go with him on these hunts in mountains all over the world and different places we'd go on hunts. And, you know, so that I was able to do physical. That's where I found my love of mountains and everything. And then his knees got bad, so he couldn't climb in the mountains anymore. So when that was over, it was like I had all this extra energy and I'm like, I need to do something with it. So it was like I always liked to cycle and I swam a bit and I'm like, well, I never really cared for running. And I'm like, well, if I start to run, then I can do a triathlon. So that's what I did. I started running and it took me a long time to get to the point where I loved running. But one day I was running and I fell in love with it. And I was like, oh, this is that runner's high they talk about. I hit that. And it's like, so then I loved to run. And that's how I got into triathlon. And I did, you know, I did pretty well in it, you know, did all the sprints and the middle distance and the half Ironman distance, and then finally did an Ironman. And then it got too predictable. And it was just like the same thing. You swim, you bike, you run, you swim, you bike, you run. And I needed something a little bit different. So then I got into obstacle course racing and then just recently got into adventure racing. And I really love adventure racing just because it kind of levels the playing field as you get older, because if you can't, like, the navigation portion of it will kind of level the playing field. If you don't have to be the fastest or the, you know, the strongest at everything. Cause if you can navigate, you can make up so much more time. So I enjoy the adventure racing cause you use your brain and not just your physicality. So.
So Obstacle course racing. Explain it. Because everybody says obstacle course racing is the savior of adventure racing, because all of those people are going to become adventure racers someday. So
that could be true, because what's good about what I like about obstacle course racing is I have really good upper body strength. So, you know, that's makes it a lot more enjoyable for me, because there's so many obstacles that require upper body strength. And if you struggle with that, it can make it not so fun. And I never have a problem crawling around in mud or anything like that. So that also works. And I love trail running. So, you know, obstacle course racing combines. I like to do the longer distance ones. Like, they'll have sprint ones that are like just obstacles, one after another, boom, boom, boom. But I like them where you break up the running in between the obstacles, and you know, you'll do monkey bars, and then you'll run a quarter of a mile, and you'll climb over a high wall, and then you'll run a half a mile, and then you'll maybe pick up a sandbag and carry it up and down and around. And they'll have all sorts of different things. So it breaks up the monotony of just run, 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 run. You know, you get to run, and then you come up to an obstacle, and you're like, okay, how am I going to do this obstacle? Let me see, you know, which lane do I want to pick? You know, which has the better knot on the rope when you have to climb up a rope, that type of thing. So yeah, obstacle course racing is fun. I enjoy that. And the people in the obstacle course racing are like adventure racers. It's a good group of people, and you can always find friends when you get there. You know, you always feel welcome, whether you're just starting out or you've been doing it forever. You can always find people that are want to help you, or people that you can help or inspire, or they inspire you. And it's a nice community.
Yeah. Do they have specific set of obstacles, and then that could be in any order, or it can it be just whatever?
They mix them up, they change them around. You know, your different race types, like Spartan Race or Savage Race or like Tough Mudder, they'll all have their own different sets of obstacles, you know, that are, you know, they'll have certain obstacles that are specific only to them. And then sometimes there's a lot that are similar from race to race, but they never set them up the same. They never put them in the same order. And, you know, and even when they go from the same venue from year to year, it's never the same course. They always find different trails to put you on, different ways to route you around and everything. So it's never the same. It's always different.
Yeah. So has there ever been an obstacle in a race that you came running up to and you just stopped and like laughed at it? It's so ridiculous.
Not really. Okay. Sometimes you'll have you crawling through mud forever. That is like, you know, sometimes it can get a little tedious and old, and you're like, why, you know, why do you have to do this for so long, type of thing. But I just kind of take it as it comes and enjoy it.
Well, that's cool. So when did you start adventure racing?
A little over 2 years ago. I had done one like 4-hour adventure race that was like, that I was like driving on my way from. I had just done like a weekend obstacle course race, and I was going from there. And I was driving down to my stepdaughter's in Virginia, and I was coming through the Philadelphia area, and I think it was Goals Adventure Racing. The timing just happened to be that they had a race there. And for some of the Spartan endurance events, you needed to know how to navigate. And so I'm like, I need to learn better how to navigate. And so that's how I started to look into adventure racing. So I signed up for this little 4-hour event, and that was like, I think 3 years ago, and I did it, and I really enjoyed it and had fun. And so then after that, I saw the C2C, and I go to Florida. I live in central New York State, and I get to winter in Florida, on the west coast of Florida for 3 months, and I saw the C2C advertised, and I'm like, man, I would love to do that, you know. So I was like, I didn't, you know, I had to find somebody to do it with. So I, you know, reached out to some of my Spartan buddies, and I'm like, anybody interested in that? And a couple of people were like, yeah, that's pretty cool. It sounds neat and everything like that. And then they were like, man, that's expensive, you know, cause you know, for the price of it, you know, it was pricey for like a single race. And so I had another friend that she had done several of the 60-hour Agogies. which are Spartan events. And so I knew she had the endurance and the commitment. She's like, yeah, I'd really like to try it. And so I knew that if we signed up and went as a team, that she wouldn't flake out on me in the middle of the race. So the C2C was her very first adventure race. It was my second, and I'd only done a 4-hour one before that, but we gutted it out and went through it, and we just had a blast and we fell in love with it. So it's like, now it's like, where can we go more? So, you know, this year will be our third C2C in this February. So yeah. Cool. So we kind of jumped in the deep end on the adventure racing, you know.
I can't even keep count of how many people that's what they did. And probably specifically women, you know, mm-hmm. that jumped in 4-day races, 8-day races, 9-day, you know, why not? But so I do have another obstacle question.
Okay.
So you kind of listed, there's Spartan and Tough Mudder, and do each like company have a flavor? Are they different, or are they really kind of the same, just branded different?
You know, I think they're all different. They all have their own little angles that they go at. And, you know, one thing I really enjoy, and, you know, I don't want to say one's better than the other,
yeah.
but one of the race series that I really enjoy is the Spartan race series, because they have races for every level of person. And they start out from like a sprint, which is, you know, like a 5K course, all the way up to their endurance, you know, 60-hour events. And so there's something for everyone, and you can progress your way through and keep moving up and keep moving on. And they're always changing things around and, you know, trying to keep current. And, you know, it's not the same thing over and over again all the time.
Do people tend to stay with the same type, same group?
Some do and some don't, you know. For me, it's for me, I try to find races that, you know, fit my schedule and, you know, are near enough, you know, wherever I happen to be. Like, you know, I don't want to drive a long ways to do a 3 or 5 hour course. That's another reason I like to do the longer events, is like, you know, you travel, you spend so much time traveling to a place. I like to race for at least longer than I've traveled to get there, you know.
That was always Paulette and I's rules, that you had the race had to be longer than the drive.
Yeah.
So all right. So first time you go to C2C, expectations versus reality. How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, we were like, oh yeah, we're gonna clear the course, you know, we're gonna get all the checkpoints. I had no idea. Like, I thought, you know, the way I thought it was you were going to make your way from the East Coast or from the West Coast back to the East Coast, like linearly, like you're going to hit each checkpoint along the way, and you just had to find your way to those checkpoints, and they were going to be like really obvious. I didn't realize it was going to be, okay, you're going to like go to this one section and you might have to, you know, then you're going to stop there, and there's going to be like 20 checkpoints all around different places that you're going to have to find your way to. You know, I didn't realize that it wasn't going to be here to there, it was going to be like this, you know. So it was like, and then not realizing, understanding the concept of how long it was going to take to get from A to B. Like, when we first started out that first day, we were so unequipped because we didn't get to transition till like midnight of the first day or something like that, and we were so cold on the bike because we didn't have any of our, you know, gloves or any of our warm clothing for the bike, and we were like totally clueless. So then we realized that, okay, now we have to start skipping checkpoints and let's figure out what we can do and what we can't do. And then, you know, and then Kirsten, my teammate, had an issue with her knee, and it was the first time I was ever at the point where, working as a team, you had to decide, okay, when do you call it quits? Because Kirsten's she's a personal trainer, and, you know, if she gets injured, that can affect her livelihood. So I'm like, yeah. Kirsten, we got to do, you know, I know you want to finish, and she'll do anything to finish, which I knew that. But I said, we've got to make a decision if continuing can cause you more injury to your knee, or, you know what. So then we started to, you know, it was kind of a cool thing because I finally had to work as a team and not as an individual. And we had to say, okay, yeah, we really want to finish this race, but at what cost? And yeah, we were ready to make the decision, okay, maybe not, or yes, you know, so that was kind of cool. But yeah, expectations, yeah, it was a lot harder than what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, well, it's Florida. How hard can it be, right?
Exactly. It's flat, you know, and I was amazed at how many hills they could find in flat, you know, Florida, you know.
Yeah.
But
anyway. So did you not really kind of think about the team aspect before the race? Did that kind of like, I don't know, not think about it?
You know, it did a little bit. The team, I knew that you had to work as a team and finish as a team. And that was the big thing with like with Kirsten when we teamed up. I knew that we'd been in races together, but we hadn't been like, we did a couple of Agogies, which are Spartan 60 hour events, but we didn't work together during those. We were on like two different teams in that. But I knew that if she had the commitment that she wasn't going to flake out, you know, midnight on the second day and say, I've had enough of this, I'm not doing it anymore. You know, she was in it for the long haul. So we both knew that, you know, the type of thing was they're going to have to carry us out on a stretcher. That's the only way we're not finishing, that type of thing. So that was, we thought about that as the team aspect. But for me, I've always been like, I train alone. I do endurance things alone. I spend a lot of time alone. So working as a team and having to not go, you know, like, okay, if your teammate's struggling, you've got to, you know, you go at the pace your teammate, you got to, you know, you got to adjust and, you know, you have little disagreements on, you know, okay, I don't think we're going the right way. Yeah, we're going the right way, you know, that type of thing. So it was really the dynamics of working as a team was, it's, you know, kind of hard for me sometimes, but I'm getting better at it. So that was another thing with, you know, working with C2C. It was,
yeah. So, and I'm pretty sure I'm right, but you've done two person teams both years.
Yes.
Why? You just, can have four.
Because, you know, it was our first time teaming up as a team and our first, you know, like adventure race, real serious adventure race experience. So I think C2C, we're always going to do together as a team of just two people. It just kind of, because it's like how we got started. But since then, we've done other events together as a team. We've also done it as three, you know, as we've taken on doing it three people on a team. And we've also done some solo events. So just kind of mixing it up. But C2C, I think we'll always do, Kirsten and I will always do together as a team. Unless one or the other of us gets injured.
Are you okay, though? Because, you know, a lot of times, specifically there, you know, you'll end up with a group of teams together. Is that okay with you? Or did you try to
Yeah. You know what? I'm always, the biggest thing for me is I have so much to learn, especially in the navigation. So when you wind up traveling with other teams, I really enjoy that because you can learn. You watch not only their team dynamics, but the way they're navigating and you can talk to them and you find out, you know, how they approach different things. And that's what's great about like adventure racers. Everybody always wants to help other people, you know? And so I really enjoy that because I like to learn, you know, I'm not all about let's go the fastest we can go, let's win this thing or all that, you know, I like to learn in the whole dynamics of the racing and see how different people do things and what gear they have and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Well, and hear new stories and yeah, it's, that's fun to be together. But do you ever get to a point where you're like, yeah, let's us go this way, let them go that way?
Yeah, we've done that before. Yeah, you know, like if you're with somebody and they're like, I don't like the choices they're making, let's just do our own. Yeah, we've done that before. And I've done that also when I race solo a couple of times where I got in with a group of people and they're going off and these two guys are like, yeah, well, let's just make a reckoning and let's head off this way. And like, we don't even know where we are, you know, and you're going to take like a dead reckoning going for a point that you're not even sure where you're at. How can you be like sending a going off in a direction, hoping you're going to find a checkpoint? I'm like, no, time for me to go back and where I knew where I was and start over again, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's much better on that, you know, but
yeah. So do you have a a favorite and a least favorite checkpoint from sea to sea?
Oh, I really liked the one last year with the pond there where we took a swim. That was a really nice one. It just, that was, I enjoyed that. Least favorite sea to sea. The first year there was one, like it was really right off the bat where we were in some scrub where, and this was, we were so green, we didn't know, you know, we thought, okay, the maps, everything's marked on the map, you know? So when there's a trail cut somewhere that's not on the map, we're like, that's not right. That's gotta be there, you know? And so there was one checkpoint, like we didn't cross the road and it was like 100 yards off the road that we said, oh, it can't be over this road because this, you know, that road, the road that it was crossed wasn't marked on the map. And we're like, it had to be on the map, you know? I can't remember exactly what checkpoint it was, but then we finally found it. We're like, oh, you know?
Here's where it is. Yeah.
Yep.
So how much convincing did it take to get you guys to jump into the pond?
You know, Kirsten was ready to go right in. And then I was like, I don't. And then I'm like, what the, you know, and then I got to thinking, I'm like, I'm never going to get this chance. When do you get the chance to do this? You know, and it was warm. And it's like, you know, it takes 5 or 10 minutes. You're thinking 5 or 10. And I was like, I jumped and it was like, it took me like 1 minute, to, you know, there was that 1 minute where I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, why the heck not? You know? And so then off we went in the water and that was a blast. That was like one of the best decisions. And if you weren't there saying, you know, aren't you going to go in? We wouldn't have done it, you know?
Yeah.
And then we were so glad when we did. We talked about it for like hours after. I'm so glad we did that. That was so nice. That was so refreshing, you know?
Yeah. So, and until Rootstock beat you out, it was the pitcher of the year, as far as I was concerned, of you guys jumping in. So, and I'm giving it to Rootstock because there's 4 people in there. In their
no worries.
Kitchen.
No worries.
So what have you learned? Sort of two part about adventure racing and specifically sea to sea. What have you learned in the last 2 years that you can take into next year into February?
I've learned we need to budget our time better. We need to figure out how much time we have for each section and kind of work our way back so that we don't, you know, waste time on points that we can't get so that, you know, easier points that we could have gotten better, you know, that we didn't have enough time to get, you know, that. So time management is one of the things that taking forward into it. And then just, I've improved my navigation skills and to trust my navigation skills. Cause that's the biggest thing. Like if you don't, I realize I'm better than I think I am. So if I trust in my skills, then that's what I need to take. I'm going to be taking that. And I think that's going to help us to improve a lot.
Interesting. So do you, what do you do to improve your navigation? Just race?
Just race, yeah.
Okay.
Just race, and you know, I read and study a little bit, but yeah, I'm a better hands-on learner, and like you know, when I am in races and there's people that are around me that have good navigation skills, just learning from what they're doing and listening and paying attention makes a huge difference. Like last year after C2C was over because it, you know, had ended abruptly. And then there was an opportunity to go out on the last navigation section to take down, to collect all the controls. I was able to go out on that. And it was nice because I was, you know, we were going with some people, Dave Ashley, that was, you know, good with navigation and things like that. So we learned, you know, how to, you know, a lot of really good things from that. So yeah, mostly on the job training, I guess, is the way I
work. Well, I mean, you can do all the things and little, you know, orienteer.co stuff that Jason and Daniel have and all that stuff. But it's just hard not, you know, unless somebody wants to go and set up courses for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to go race.
Exactly.
So while it's like October already, but do you have anything else left for this year, or are you kind of kicking back yet?
Yeah, because I was supposed to be, actually right now I was supposed to be down in Patagonia running a marathon down there. I'm going for my seven continents for the marathons and I have two left, but they canceled that because of COVID. So that kind of screwed up my, you know, because that was pretty much going to finish off the end of the year. So when that got canceled, that's why I did last week. I did the Stockville. I was able to do that. And I'm going to do the 12-hour cauldron at the end of mm-hmm. this month.
Yeah.
So I'll take my van to Florida and do that. And I'm not sure if I'm going to do anything else at the end of this year or not. Spartan Race has another one of their Agogis, a 60-hour Agogi in Abu Dhabi, the end of November. And I'm thinking about that. I just don't know if I can pull it off. But yeah. That's pretty much going to close out my year and, you know, just get ready for C2C in February and see what comes up in between.
You know, there is a new burgeoning AR scene in Abu Dhabi, too, so. Yeah, they're having like five more races this winter over there.
Wow, I'm going to have to learn how to put my bike together though. I'm one of those people that, you know, I like to take to the bike shop and let them do it. But if you start traveling, you know, to these international adventure races, you're going to have to learn how to assemble and disassemble your bike yourself. You know,
I can message Jacques, the race director, and tell them you need a bike shop when you get there. So how was Stockville?
Stockville was a lot of fun. You know, even when I hated it, I loved it. There was a lot of elevation, you know, and it's all on foot. And I mean, there were times when we were crawling up the sides of the mountains, and but it was really beautiful. It was a gorgeous course. You know, a lot of, you know, you're in the woods almost the whole time and there's a lot of streams and rocks and, you know, just mushrooms. It was beautiful. The weather was perfect on Saturday. And then we got some rain on Sunday, but it was warm enough that it, you know, you didn't get cold when you got wet. So that was fun. And yeah, some of the points were a little difficult to find. We, of course, didn't manage our time really well, but we did okay. And I teamed up with, you know, I wanted to do it and I thought you could do it as a solo. So I went and signed up thinking, okay, because it said single, and but what it said was single sex, you know, single, you know, sex teams, like all female, all male. And I just read single and I thought single solo, okay, sign up. And then, you know, email Abby and say, oh, I wanted to do it solo, but I didn't see the solo link. So I signed up as a team. She said, you can't do it solo. So I was trying to find a teammate and I couldn't. And then when I got back from Kilimanjaro, I, you know, checked their website again. And then there was another lady, Diana Driscoll, who had lost her partner because he had broke his arm. So she was looking for a teammate. I'm like, there we go. So we, you know, I messaged her and we joined forces and like a week before the Stockville. So we met each other the night before and we raced together and we had a great time. And we both were like, well, navigation's my weak point. And she's like, yeah, navigation's my weak point. So I'm like, well, we'll figure it out. And we did well. So we were happy. Yeah.
That's the perfect adventure race.
That's the nice thing about adventure racing, because you can, here's somebody, we didn't even know each other. And like a week before the race, we're like, you know, let's team up. And I mean, we got along great. You know, cool. And we had a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, it's probably late there, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So, it's still, we got a little bit of light here. So maybe I'll take Chili out for a little walk. So I appreciate it. And
well, thanks for having me. I hope I didn't talk too fast. Sometimes when I get excited, I like,
That's what makes people excited, is excited people that are having fun and enjoying life. So cool. So I guess see you. And I don't know, it's not very far away, is it?
February. No, it's not. Okay.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye.